the Arizona Sports Virtual Tailgate. Virtual Tailgate. It's your cue to call.
And if your name is Cynthia Pepin, P-E-P-I-N, Cynthia Pepin from Levine, you have 10 minutes to call to qualify for the Arizona Sports Virtual Tailgate presented by Four Peaks Brewing Company. 10 minutes to call, 602-260-9870. This includes a brand new $700 barbecue grill, a custom Arizona Sports cornhole set, but only, Cynthia, if you call in the next 10 minutes. 602-260-9870. 602-260-9870. If we don't hear from Cynthia in 10 minutes or so, we'll open it up, take caller number 10. But for now, Cynthia Pepin from Levine, you are on the clock. 602-260-9870.
It's exclusive to Cynthia for these next 10 minutes. Just her can win it.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Only her
just only
can
her.
Win that.
Nobody else.
Great prize.
Nobody else. Gambo here, breaking it down like no other. The Pac-12 announced today that they are returning, that football will return on November 6th and November 7th. They sent out a release about it. The football season may now commence for those teams that have all the necessary health approvals on November 6th. Men and women's basketball can begin on November 25th. The release confirms there will be no fans permitted at any sporting competition on Pac-12 campuses. They will reconsider that decision in January of 2021, and that the football schedule will be released in the coming days. That's all we know at this point. So ASU, U of A, I don't know when that game's going to be. Initially, it was at the end. Then they redid the schedule. It was at the beginning. I don't know where it's going to be now. The crossover game, five games against the Pac-12 South for ASU and one against the North. How do they figure out what the one North matchup is? Don't know. Not sure. It could be one of the teams they're already going to play on the schedule, just to make it simple. I don't know how they're going to come up with that.
Now, looking at this, they leave themselves no margin for error either, okay? So if there's any kind of outbreak, if they're going to start on the weekend of the 6th, they're going to play, I'll just give you the Saturdays. They may play it on Friday. But the 7th, the 14th, the 21st, the 28th of November, that's four games in November. Then the 5th and the 12th in December, that's your 7. There's no room for an error. If you can't play, then you can't play. We see Notre Dame can't play this week, right? The Notre Dame-Wake Forest game. We've seen Houston struggle. We've seen teams have to lose games but be able to make those games up because they've had time to make them up. The Pac-12 has no margin for error. If they miss a game, they will not play seven games because you can't make it up at any point. You can't make it up. So that's the one – that would be like the one issue that they have, is that if there is any coronavirus outbreak, if there's any issues at all, players test positive, 10 guys can't go, is it possible that you have teams playing less than seven games?
Yeah, and as we talked about earlier in the week or late last week, I can't remember which, I mean, having the daily testing that's 98% accurate and takes 15 minutes, that's great. But that doesn't stop an outbreak from happening, right? If you can have the testing, but that doesn't mean that you won't have nine offensive linemen that test positive the same week and jeopardize your ability to play. It just gives you the capacity to know that nine of your offensive linemen have tested positive, not prevent nine of your offensive linemen from testing positive. So you're absolutely right. There's no margin for error. There's no wiggle room here. I think you and I agree. The most important part about this is not about inclusion in the college football playoff. If that happens, great. The most important part here is that you were on the verge of getting left behind if you were the Pac-12. The Big Ten's go. The SEC's going this weekend. The Big 12 and the ACC have already gone. If you were going to be the only Power 5 conference not playing, that'd be a bad look for you, be a bad look for your coaches, for the respect of your conference, for recruiting and kids and whether kids would want to go play for a Pac-12 school. You had to demonstrate your willingness and ability to keep up with the rest of college football. Otherwise, you were going to get left behind by college football, and the Pac-12 could not afford that.
No, once the Big Ten said that they were coming back to play, we assumed the Pac-12 would be right behind them. We just knew that there, as I had said at the time, is that they have a lot more challenges. They have a lot more difficulties. California and Oregon, right? You had to have responses from the governors in order to say, wait, hold off. Okay, we'll figure this out. The Oregon governor had to lift a restriction. The California governor, I mean, he was like, no, I think we can play. I mean, you got to go look at the rules. And so there was a lot of controversy on that. And so getting everybody together, we still have this Colorado thing where they can't, you know, can Colorado practice over the next 2 weeks? Right now they say no because they've got some, you know, outbreaks coming and they can't have large gatherings. And that includes football teams for the next 2 weeks. So I'm sure the Denver Broncos get a pass on that, but I don't think the Colorado Buffaloes will.
No, I don't think they will either, and that's an impediment. And what's going on in the Bay Area, that's an impediment. And yeah, there's still hurdles to be cleared. Here, not as many impediments, and that's why you and Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source both believe that ASU is in a much better position than most Pac-12 teams to be good sooner.
USC and Oregon have had key players opt out, multiple at both schools, plus Stanford lost its best offensive lineman. Cal lost one of its better players. ASU has not lost anybody. So in addition to those schools being behind from a conditioning, fitness, strength standpoint, they also have some losses. Now, maybe some other guys may make decisions on what they're going to do after this information has come out. We'll have to see about that. But I think ASU is one of the better positioned teams right now.
And ASU, I think, is one of the better teams, period, in the Pac-12, which brings up an interesting scenario. Everybody assumes that if an undefeated team is going to try to qualify for the college football playoffs, that it's either going to be Oregon or USC. It could be ASU, too. They're good enough that they could go 6-0, 7-0. And the question is, will the Pac-12 champ, if it's undefeated, will they get inclusion into the Final Four? Because
if they play less games, probably not. They'll probably take teams that are undefeated in other conferences over the Pac-12 because they didn't play as many games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can't be equal because they're not going to play the same amount of games. But if you're talking there's six undefeated teams and the Pac-12 has one of them, they're not getting in.
No, I agree. As long as there's a big gap between how many teams, how many games they played and how many games the Pac-12 played. If the Big Ten is only able to play 8 games because of positive tests and cancellations and postponements, if the SEC is able to play only 8 games, 9 games, if the Pac-12 is close, now I don't know how close they have to be. Is it within a game? Is it within 2? I don't know. But as long as the total number of games is relatively close, I think they can make that argument. But if the SEC has played 10, if the Big 12 has played 10 and the Pac-12 has only played 7, I don't think they can get in even if they have an undefeated team. I just don't think they'll get voted in by that committee. But if the number of total games that the other teams from the other conferences play is relatively close to that of the Pac-12 because of cancellations and postponements, well, then I think, the Pac-12 has a chance of getting a team in the Final Four.
I'm just looking at Alabama. They play Missouri this weekend, right? It's Saturday. You got Alabama against Missouri. It's on ESPN. Then they got A&M, Ole Miss. They got Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi State, LSU, Kentucky, Auburn, Arkansas. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games.
I know,
you're not going to get in.
I know, but the whole point is, if from cancellations and postponements, if they can't play of those 10 games.
But here's the other thing.
That's what we're talking about here.
Alabama beats LSU by 6. Alabama goes undefeated. LSU's got a loss. LSU's getting in over an undefeated Pac-12 team with 7 games.
Yeah.
If they only lose one game and their only loss is they're going to get 2 in. So the point is, unless it's within a game. But if another conference has played 3 more games and a great team has 1 loss, like that team is going to get in over the Pac-12.
I know you're going to hate this. Our colleague Dan Bickley wrote a column a couple days ago at ArizonaSports.com, and he's not the only one
who's
suggested
this. He's the
best. He is the best. He's the most prolific writer in the history of Arizona sports, right? At least
right.
That's what
I agree.
Heard. He suggests that one year only, because we're in the middle of a pandemic and everything's screwy in 2020, let every single conference champ in, do 3 wild cards, 1 small school, 2 wild cards from the Power 5, every conference champion, go to 8 in 2020 only. just in 2020, just as we've seen baseball expand this year, we've seen football expand this year, we've seen hockey expand this year, and they've all done it because we're in a set of unusual circumstances right now in sports as we know it. His suggestion was for 1 year and 1 year only, expand the college football playoffs so that every conference champ gets in, a couple of wild cards get in, a small school gets in, and you just do it this year so that you take this element of the argument out of the argument. I like it. What do you think?
I could live with it for 1 year.
Okay.
I could live with it for, I mean, this, you know me. I've been open to a lot of the crazy stuff that's gone on this year because we're in a pandemic. I'm doing a show from my house. I haven't done a show in a studio in 6-7 months. It's just a crazy world we're living in. A baseball season is 60. The Diamondbacks end Sunday. It's the last game. They played 60 baseball games. 60.
Right, right.
The NBA's in a bubble in Orlando. Like, we've dealt with a lot of crazy stuff. So I am not going to pout and get upset if they do something unique like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not in favor of a big playoff thing with college football. You know that. I like the regular season. I like how much the regular season means. But because it's less of a regular season for some of these schools, it's not a crazy idea for 1 year. Now, over a full regular season, I think you could easily determine who the four best teams are.
Yeah, I just know you've always been opposed to expanded playoffs, but because this is such a unique scenario, that's why I couched it the way I did. When we come back, Cardinals defense, they've looked impressive through the first two games of the season, but according to Vance Joseph, this week it gets that much tougher for them, and we'll explain why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Arizona Sports Virtual Tailgate.
Virtual Tailgate.
Congratulations to Cynthia.
Yes!
Pepin. From Levine.
There she is.
Big winner. She's in on the ultimate virtual tailgate experience about an hour and a half before this weekend's game against the Lions. She and other Arizona sports listeners will participate in the virtual tailgate with a couple of hosts here at the radio station. Talk a little Cardinals football, special NFL guests. She also wins a brand new $700 barbecue grill and a custom Arizona sports cornhole set. If you want to be like Cynthia and win, text the word GATE, G-A-T-E, to 620-620, and you can win just like Cynthia Pepin did from Levine. Congratulations to her. We'll have one more winner that we'll announce tomorrow at 5 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Vance Joseph, defensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals, who has been blessed with a lot more tools in the tool belt to go to work with every single Sunday this year, and it's been obvious, whether it's Devondre Campbell, whether it's been Devon Kennard, Jordan Phillips, et cetera, Angelo Blackson. I mean, it just goes on and on, the improvements that have been made. He said this week we're going to need them because we think Detroit has the best passing offense that we have faced so far.
We played two games, and in my opinion, this is the best pass offense that we're going to see in the first 3 weeks, and it starts with the quarterback in the scheme, you know, and obviously having, you know, three or four targets that they can get the ball to. You know, they got the 19 Galladay, who's back this week. Hawkinson, a tight end, who hurt us last year with 100-plus yards. Danny Amendola, who's a veteran guy on third downs. He is winning a lot on third downs. And Marvin Jones, who I was with in Cincinnati, who's a hell of a deep threat, who's a tough guy who can make plays in traffic. And you add the Swift guy they drafted from Georgia this year, 32, who's explosive out of the backfield. It's a nightmare for our backers with those little small backs.
Now, unlike earlier when Cliff Kingsbury might have been paying the Lions a little bit of lip service when he was talking about how good their defense is, I actually believe a lot of what Vance Joseph is saying about Detroit's offense.
Yes.
They do have some good players on that offensive unit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I loved that kid, DeAndre Swift, at Georgia. I did. I loved him. I thought he was fantastic. So, they have good weapons. If the key is just is Galladay. Is he healthy or is he not? Hasn't played in any games. There was no preseason. He didn't play in the first game. He didn't play in the second game. He's got a hamstring injury. Is he going to go out there and play the majority of the snaps? I doubt it. I mean, I doubt you're just going to go from not playing at all with a hamstring injury to let me just go play all the snaps. They got a great tight end. This will be the first real challenge. Nothing against Kittle, but he got banged up on the play by Buddha. So he wasn't, you know, 100% healthy for that game. Last week, not a great tight end in Logan Thomas. Marvin Jones, a very good player. Always liked him. Very good player. Yeah, there's weapons. I mean, they've got weapons on that offense. And they're going to want to dominate the time of possession and control the ball and keep Kyler Murray off the field.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson is a factor in all of this as well. He's their leading rusher. I mean, it's the Vance Joseph says that offense with Stafford running it looks like they should be 2-0, not 0-2.
The quarterback has Hall of Fame numbers. I mean, he can make every throw. He's got great poise. He can buy time in a pocket. And when you watch this offense play, it looks like a 2-0 offense. So it's going to be a challenge for us to go out there Sunday and to slow this offense down. Our guys understand that. I get that. So we are focused on being the best we can be again on Sunday morning, because if not, it can get bad quickly with this quarterback and this offense.
Which is why you think the Cardinals, this is going to be the Cardinals' defense game, that they need their defense to step up to limit that Detroit offense. I look at it the other way and think this might be a Cardinals' offense game to kind of outscore Detroit in this game, because I think Detroit's going to get plenty of points in this one. But either way you look at it, Detroit's offense comes in here, and they've got weapons, and the Cardinals' defense is going to have to step up big time.
Well, you got to figure, which unit out of the four, the two offenses and the two defenses, take special teams out, which unit has a better chance of, you know, of stopping the other? Detroit's defense is not going to stop the Cardinals' offense. They're not. The Cardinals are going to get their points. I'd be surprised if they got anything less than 30. I really would. The Cardinals' defense probably has the best chance of slowing down the Detroit offense, but it's not going to be easy. I mean, it's not. It'll be a tough chore because of all the weapons they have. Detroit might be okay with the shootout. They might realize that's the only way they're going to win a game is with a shootout.
Perhaps.
So,
yeah,
that's, you know, I don't think Detroit's looking to, I don't think anybody's looking to win a game, you know, 20-14 here. I think these are two offenses that could score. You've mentioned it a couple times this week. Detroit's gotten ahead by double digits in a bunch of these games. They just keep losing the games because their defense sucks.
Four straight games.
They've
been talented enough to jump out to a double-digit lead. And let's be honest, I don't know if they're a 2-0 offense. They should be a 1-1 football team if DeAndre Swift doesn't drop that ball against the Bears in week one.
Yes.
I mean, it was a easy, and it's easy for me to say because I've never played at the NFL level, as an easy touchdown catch. That's a play that an NFL player should make, and DeAndre Swift didn't make it. And if he does, they're 1-0. And they don't blow a double-digit lead against the Chicago Bears. They rally to win that game, but they didn't. And they're 0-2 because of it. Now, something else we've talked a lot about, Patrick Peterson. You don't think this is the Patrick Peterson game where they need him to be great, in large part because you question whether Galladay is going to be healthy enough to make Peterson be great to beat him. But Vance Joseph was asked if Peterson's going to shadow Kenny Galladay on Sunday, and here's what Vance Joseph said.
Well, we'll see. You know, whatever is best for our football team, we'll do. This guy hadn't played in 2 weeks, so we'll see how much he plays. And with a receiver coming off of a hamstring pull, it's tough to play every down. So we'll see how they use him early on. And if we have to match Patrick on him, you know, that's obviously something we can do during the game. But we do have a plan for him if he plays, you know, every down or he plays 20 snaps. And again, you know, with him out, that offense should look different. And it's gonna call for us to play balanced football as far as you know, how we close the middle or how much shell we play versus their first, second down pass game.
You think it's going to be the Dallas game where they're going to need Peterson to be great?
Just
because you don't know if Galladay is going to be ready or not.
I don't know. I don't know if Galladay is going to be able to, you know, after a hamstring injury and not playing at all for the last 2 weeks. In my first game, I just don't know how much he'll play. The Dallas game to me is the one because Amari Cooper is a great receiver. He's got 16 catches, fourth in the NFL right now. He's got 181 yards. That puts him top 10. And he's a good matchup. I mean, he's a good football player. He's a really good wide receiver. And then you got that LSU-Alabama thing. You know, Peterson going up against an Alabama guy and Cooper, like, that's a challenge. Those guys still, that rivalry still exists. Like, they still don't like each other. They want to get the better of each other. So when I look at the matchups, and there's not a lot of great ones out there, you know, for him. But when I look at the matchups, it's that one to me that kind of stands out when they play Dallas. I think the other one is Buffalo when he goes up against Stephon Diggs, who, I mean, he's number one in the NFL in yards. Stephon Diggs has 239 receiving yards, the most in the NFL. That will be a tough matchup. He's got 16 catches. That's eight a game. and 239 yards. He's killing it this year. So those two games, to me, those will be bigger challenges when you go up against Diggs and when you go up against Cooper than going up against Galladay.
Coming up, oh, I do want to remind everybody as well. I meant to mention this. I'm going to mention this right now. With all the news about the Pac-12 and ASU and everything, tonight at 7, the Maroon Monsoon will feature Herm Edwards. You'll hear that on here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. And Coach Edwards is scheduled to be on ESPN's College Game Day show this Saturday at 7:45 a.m. We're going to talk more about ASU, the Pac-12, the announcement that they're back coming up in just a little bit. But when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, got one ranking here who says the Cardinals don't have one of the top backfields in the NFL. When judging the Cardinals' rushing attack, is it fair to just look at their running backs when making that determination? We'll explain coming up here on the Burns and Gambo show. Welcome back to Burns and Gambo show here on this Thursday on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. I kind of chuckled because I think I know how Gambo's going to react to this story because I know how Gambo reacted to this story in pre-show. There's this ranking on NFL.com. The NFL's top 10 backfields, and they rank, as you would expect, the top backfields in the NFL. And it's funny, I'm laughing because what they write about it. Bell cows still exist, but we are in an interesting era in the professional game of football in which having a strong overall backfield is arguably more important than the presence of a star running back. Through 2 weeks, the most successful NFL teams are finding its best to spread the wealth and reap the rewards when it comes to running the football. For this edition of the Position Power Rankings, I've assembled the league's best backfields as we near week 3, focusing on each team's primary ball carriers. Now keep in mind, the Arizona Cardinals have the 5th most rushing yards in the National Football League.
Yeah, okay? a lot of that because of their quarterback.
Of course. So when you look at this list, number 1, Cleveland Browns. Number 2, okay. Green Bay Packers.
Great rushing attack.
Oh, that's
Chubb and Hunt have been great. Yep.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Green Bay Packers number 2. San Francisco 49ers number 3. Tampa Bay Buccaneers number 4 with Fournette and Ronald Jones.
Yeah, and Fournette's kind of just getting started. I mean, Bruce Arians has talked a lot about how he's just, you know, once he gets into the system and he understands everything, they'll give him more of a load.
Yeah. Baltimore Ravens, number 5. And of the Ravens, they write, we must always remind readers that Baltimore's backfield numbers do not include rushes by quarterback Lamar Jackson. I think people can figure out where this is going now. Number 6, the Steelers. Number 7, the Rams. Number 8, the Chiefs. Number 9, the Chargers. Number 10, the Dolphins. No Arizona Cardinals, even though they've got the 5th most rushing yards in the NFL. Yes, a lot of that's from their quarterback. Should that matter in a ranking like this?
No.
Should it?
Man, the only thing that matters is the results. What's the results say? Cardinals are top 5 in rushing? How many rushing touchdowns were there last week? 2 by Kyler Murray? Did they not count as a rushing touchdown? Of course they count. Some of this stuff is stupid because they're not really taking into account, you know, what Kyler Murray does. That's a rush. It's a designed running play. Both of those touchdowns were designed running plays. So it doesn't matter how you get there. It just matters what the end result is. If I hand it off to Kenyon Drake or Chase Edmonds and I run 24 yards for a touchdown, or I have Kyler Murray fake a reverse and then run, it's the same thing. It's a touchdown. It's a rushing touchdown. Doesn't matter how you get there. It just matters that you got there. So this thing, in the end, I still think that Kenyon Drake is the Cardinals are going to end up ahead of some of these teams. They're going to end up ahead of Miami and the Chargers, probably the Rams. They're going to end up ahead of a few of these teams because Drake is good. Drake's a good running back. And over 16 games, he will be better than a lot of the running backs that are listed on this top 10 list.
I guess I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it. It just seems to me that a list like this, the way the game is changing in front of our eyes, you need to expand your idea of what a rushing attack looks like. How can you have a conversation about the best rushing attacks in the National Football League and not include quarterbacks who rush it? This is 2020. This is the era of of Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray. And I just don't know if you can have a conversation about here are the best backfields in all the NFL. We're not going to include quarterbacks, even though that's where the game is evolving to.
Right.
Right. Even though that's what the game is becoming, we're not going to include, and it's fine if they don't want to include them, but even if you didn't want to include quarterbacks, Kenyon Drake right now, and I was shocked when I saw this, he's got the 14th most rushing yards in the NFL right now. It's not like he's chopped liver, right? It's not like he's in the 20s or in the 30s. He's gotten off to what I think we would all consider to be a slow start. 146 yards rushing in two games, 4.1 yards per carry, which is good, not great. It's not elite. It's not what we saw out of him last year. He was 5.0 yards per carry, if not better than that. He certainly can be better. But, I mean, the Arizona Cardinals have two of the top 14 rushers in the NFL, and we're not going to say they have one of the best backfields in the NFL. It just doesn't it doesn't compute, right? Something doesn't – my brain's going, no. Wait, this just doesn't make any sense. We got to expand the way we think about this now.
This year's going to be a little bit different. You remember, if you go look at the numbers from last year with the running back teams, I mean, a lot of it was ball dominant by one guy. One guy was dominated the running. There wasn't a whole lot. I mean, if you go find the second best running back on every team, I think it was Dallas had the second best running back after Ezekiel Elliott. That's all the way down the list, and I think he had like 400 yards rushing. It might be a little bit more this year where teams are relying on two running backs or three running backs. It's very possible. But last year in 2019, I'm just looking this up now because I remember talking about this not too long ago. You know, you had Ezekiel Elliott was fourth in the NFL with 1,357 yards. And I think Dallas was the first team in which the second running back came into play, but he was all the way down the list, and that was Tony Pollard at number 46. And he had 455 rushing yards. But my point on all of this is it's very likely that there will be teams that have two running backs that are a lot closer than number 1 and number 45 this year because they're going to balance it out a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, honestly, the division rival of the Cardinals, the 49ers, might end up being sort of the model when it comes to that. I mean, I know Tevin Coleman's hurt, Raheem Mostert's hurt, but in an ideal world, that's exactly what they're doing. They don't really have a lead back. They've got three guys that they like between the two guys that I mentioned and Jerick McKinnon. And depending on the matchup, depending on how it goes, the Rams might end up doing something similar with Daryl Henderson and Malcolm Brown and Cam Akers. I don't know if there's a dominant lead guy who comes out of that group. It's much more by committee. And the Cardinals also might end up having a committee. It just is going to be a committee that includes a quarterback in addition to two running backs, not three running backs when it's all said and done. Look, it's just a list. And if they don't want to put them on the list, fine. They don't have to put them on the list. But I think in the future, the more quarterbacks who come into this league who are like Kyler Murray or who have somewhat of a similar skill set to Kyler Murray, maybe not exactly like him, we're going to have to start thinking about teams rushing attacks more beyond just who their running backs are because the game is changing right before our very eyes. I mean, look at Josh Allen. Look at his ability to get out and run a little bit. It's a different game. It's an evolution of the game, and that's we got to change our thinking a little bit when it comes to that.
Had Ron Jaworski on, you know, and you were a part of that for a little while. I had Ron Jaworski on for like 18, 19 years. We'd have him on every Friday to break it down. And back then, it was just, you know, he just didn't believe in the running quarterbacks. He was a pocket passer. Got to stay. Can't win if you're running. Got to stay in the pocket. Got to deliver the pass. It changed a little bit. I mean, it has. You can win. Look, Lamar Jackson hasn't helped the cause with his playoff failures, the two of them, but I think he's a very, very good quarterback. I like him a lot, and he's got to get better at passing and more accurate. But that's where I think Kyler Murray, like if you ask me who would I rather have, Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson, right now I'll take Kyler because he's a more accurate passer. You know, they're both dynamic runners in different ways, but Kyler is just, to me, a more accurate passer.
Did you just say that I was in there for a little bit of Ron Jaworski? You mean like 7 years or so, like almost nearly a decade, I think.
No, I'm just trying to think because we haven't had him in a
Jaworski
while.
The Ron show with you for we haven't had him on the show for like 2 or 3 years now.
So it's been 7 years. Yeah,
it was like seven
so I had
years,
him for so long I can't even remember.
It was like a year or two. You and I did Ron Jaworski together for about 6 or 7 years. Yeah, I mean, I know you had him on before you were with me, but it wasn't just a year or two with me with Jaws. But I
just couldn't remember.
I know. I just like giving you crap about it. When we come back, the very latest on the Pac-12 and Larry Scott's comments on whether the Pac-12 champ will be good enough to get into the college football playoffs. That's coming up next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. I do want to remind you that the Big Red Rage is coming up next at 6 o'clock, and then the Maroon Monsoon at 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. So if you're looking for more football talk, you will get it with Wolf and Calvisi and the guys at 6, and then Herm Edwards is going to join the Maroon Monsoon to talk, obviously, about today's announcement that the Pac-12 is back, and that's coming up at 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And yes, you heard us correct. The Pac-12 is back. The vote was held today, and the vote was a successful one for the return of college football in the Pac-12. Starting on the weekend of November 7th, with the possibility of games on November 6th, that Friday, the Pac-12 will play 6 regular season games, and then 1 Pac-12 championship game. And on that same weekend, when 1 is playing 1 in the Pac-12 championship game, presumably 2 will be playing 2, 3 will be playing 3, etc., etc. So all told, assuming there are no interruptions, and that might be a big if, assuming there are no interruptions, 7 total games for the Pac-12 before the college football playoff announcement. Now, I want to tell you what Larry Scott had to say about that.
Okay.
Does a 7-0 Pac-12 champ get into the playoff? Here's what the commissioner of the Pac-12 said about that just moments ago.
Yeah, our school is going to have the opportunity to be in the conversation, have every opportunity. We regularly discuss this at the CFP Management Committee. You know, there's no minimum number of games, and I think we're all very humbly going into the season, realizing there could be disruptions along the way. In fact, our fellow conferences have built that into their schedules with bye weeks, and we've seen it play out over the first few weeks. So no one knows how many games they're going to get in. It's going to be a challenge for the committee this year. They're going to have more subjectivity than they've ever had in terms of different schools with different number of games, player availability, other different conditions to contend with. But that's why we've got a committee.
Yeah, so he thinks, yes, we can get in large part because these other conferences, they might not play as many games as they think they can play.
You know what the benefit for the Pac-12 is, in all honesty? They're not playing any non-conference games, which they always lose. They always lose.
Yes,
that big game, that big non-conference game every single year, they lose it. That's a benefit to them. They're not going to play a non-conference game. They're not going to lose to Alabama. They're not going to lose to Clemson. They're not going to lose to Notre Dame. They're not going to have a big loss early in the season. They're not going to lose to Auburn. Didn't Auburn beat? Was it who did Auburn beat? Auburn beat, was it Oregon?
It was Oregon. I think it was Oregon.
Yeah, you're not going to lose that game. They lose it every year. I mean, it's a big game early. Oh, it's the big game for the Pac-12. And then what do? They wet the bed. You know, they never win that damn game. They never win it. So this is a benefit for them. They're not going to lose that game.
It's true. It's true. But will there be enough opportunities within the conference for the Pac-12 to impress this committee with wins against just the Pac-12 conference? And that's a question I don't know the answer to. And that's why it's imperative that the Pac-12, when they figure out, okay, 6 games before you get to the Pac-12 championship weekend, okay? In those 6 games, you're going to play your 5 division rivals. So ASU will play U of A, Utah, Colorado, and the Southern California schools, and then they'll play 1 Pac-12 North school. It's imperative for the Pac-12 that they identify the team that they think has the best chance of going to the college football playoff and making sure that team plays somebody tough from the other division.
I agree.
Somebody that they're going to get notoriety for beating in the other division so that they can pump up their resume and impress the voters for the college football playoffs. You can't. Let's say it's Oregon. Let's say Oregon goes 5-0 in the Pac-12 North. That's great. Don't give Oregon U of A. That's not going to impress anybody. Don't give Oregon Colorado. That's not going to impress anybody. Give Oregon USC. Give Oregon, ASU, somebody that's going, oh, okay, that's a nice win outside of their division. You've got to be thinking of that if you're the Pac-12, if you think you're going to impress the voters when it comes to getting a team in the Final Four.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's logical. It makes sense whether they do it or not. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I think it will be if these other conferences are able to get their games in. I mean, if Alabama, LSU, Georgia, if they play 10 games, a one-loss team in the SEC is going to get in over an undefeated team in the Pac-12. It's just the way it is. Better conference, better competition, and they played more games. So that's, you know, they would have to be undefeated, but then also hope that there's not a lot of other undefeateds.
Yeah, now, something else we talked about, and our colleague Dan Bickley wrote about this a couple days ago, and you know me, you and I have different thoughts about the expansion of the college football playoffs as a permanent thing. You're against it, I'm for it, and we've gone over that many, many times. But this year, in this weird pandemic 2020 year in which it's a 60-game baseball season, in which the baseball postseason's been expanded, the NFL, it was going to get expanded anyway, but everything, the NBA's in a bubble, the NHL got expanded. Why not expand the college football playoffs for this year and this year only so you allow all the conference champions in and a couple of wild cards? You're for it. I'm for it. Larry Scott today was asked if you've talked to other conferences about it, and here's what he said.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion. I think there's really no serious momentum or discussion around expansion. We're committed to the traditional dates. But we've wanted to leave it as late as possible, leave as much flexibility as possible, hence the pushing back of that final selection committee meeting on Sunday the 20th, which is later than normal, to give leagues as much chance as possible to get as many games in as possible before that final decision has to be played. So I'm not expecting that the dates of the games will move back, and we're certainly not discussing expansion at this point.
I think they should. I think that's a mistake. I think they should. I think they should talk about expanding the playoffs for this one year.
Yeah. It makes sense to me. Again, crazy year. I mean, I'd be open for, we've seen that, I mean, the NBA is playing in a bubble. They didn't play their full 82 games. The Diamondback season is going to end Sunday. They're playing 60 games. I could go for an expanded playoffs for one year.
Time for the Coors Light. What's on tonight? The games that we're going to watch this evening brought to you by Coors Light. Sports is back. Head to cold beers and cheeseburgers for draft specials. Watch your team today. Thursday night football, the Dolphins already up 14-0 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then it is game four between the Lakers and the Nuggets tonight. Nuggets look to even that series with a win. The Lakers right now lead that series 2-1. No D-backs tonight. Of course, lots of baseball tonight as well, affecting the pennant races and things like that as the baseball season winds down. Plenty to watch tonight. Plenty to talk about tomorrow. The Big Red Rage is coming up next. That's going to do it for us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Have a great night, everyone.